This is episode 160 with Dr. Nathan Lang Rad. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I help school administrators fight isolation and frustration via a leadership community in order to gain clarity and find solutions to their greatest challenges. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Nathan Lang Rad, we explore a number of interesting topics like the seven drivers of effective instructional coaching, tackling the misconceptions of collaboration, and building meetings for introverts and extroverts to thrive. Today's podcast upgrade is called Pathways to Divergence Tool. When trying to influence radical change, people are most likely to adopt your idea if you can connect it to something they're already doing. So use this tool as a way to start that discussion. You can download it at betterleadersbetterschools.com/160 Nathan Lang Rad, or click the podcast upgrade link in the show notes page. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving student soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Well, hey there, better leaders. I am so excited to be joined today by Dr. Nathan D. Lang Rad, a speaker, author, and professional learning facilitator. He is a chief education officer at WeVideo. He speaks at both local and national professional conferences and is the co-founder of BAMI Award-nominated LeadUp Chat, and is also the co-founder of Diverge Ed, another Twitter chat. Nathan is the author of the hot new book, Everyday Instructional Coaching, and is currently co-authoring a book with Robert J. Marzano on the new art and science of teaching mathematics. He resides with his husband, Herbie Rad, in sunny San Francisco, California. And to learn more about Nathan's work, visit NathanDLang.com or follow him on Twitter at Nathan Lang or N.A. Lang 1. So you'll get the link in the show notes, guys. You know that. Nathan was originally on episode 63. And Nathan, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Hey, Daniel. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So how'd I do with the pronunciation? You said you're going to hear the first time on a podcast. Did I rock it?
Oh, you rocked it. Definitely. Yeah. And Herbie will be really excited to hear. And actually, I have a new Twitter handle. It's actually at Dr. Lang Rad now. So it's DrLangRaad. So I made that switch as well.
Not a problem. And listeners, we'll clean that up in the show notes. So the link you click will bring you to the right profile.
Hi, I'm Chris Nessie from the House of EdTech podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. And make sure to check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And now, the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, Nathan, let's start with just the story of this book. You know, people are talking about it everywhere, Everyday Instructional Coaching. And, you know, yeah, I just want to hear the story of what motivated you to write it and who's it for, all of that good stuff.
Yes, Daniel, I'd be happy to share more about it. And I was super excited to work on this book. And it really resulted from my work with instructional coaches, of course. And that is really who this story is for. It's really for instructional coaches looking for ways that they can best support their fellow educators and fellow teachers. And when I was the director of curriculum and instruction in Nashville, I worked with some phenomenal coaches. You know, we had over 200 instructional coaches. And we were working in a time where the state adopted a whole new set of standards, a brand new assessment. And so we were tasked with deconstructing every single standard and then developing new scope and sequences and instructional frameworks. And there is just so much work, and it really required a new way of working together. And whenever you have a large district with schools spread out across the city, we really need continuity, and we need, you know, quality and fidelity and intensity and consistency across the board. And so that's really how this book evolved. And it's sharing my experiences and some of my lessons learned as I worked with phenomenal educators and really looking at, you know, there are books out there on the coaching cycles and as a teacher and also studying coaching. always, refer to that work, this partnership principles and things like that. But this book really focuses on, I call them 7 daily drivers. And these are our daily activities. These are mindsets and practical tools that can help a coach every day really partner alongside a teacher and help them improve and also help them better relate to students and do things that are really going to emphasize the skills that we're looking for in students. So that's really the evolution of the book, Daniel.
I love it. And you mentioned the 7 drivers. Could you give us a high-level overview without all the spoilers?
Absolutely. So whenever we look at the role of a coach, and whenever I was working with the many phenomenal coaches, there were common themes and there were common really activities and concepts that emerged. And just a few of them were looking at the way that the feedback process unfolds. And I kind of created a new word for feedback. I use the word reverberation. And the reason why I use that word is it refers to this back and forth feedback given. And we hear of feedback loops before, but this really takes it to a different level where the instructional coach and teacher are providing feedback to each other. And so it's really looking at the coach. Yes, the coach has plenty of experience and they are a master in their craft. But at the same time, we know that a teacher is going to really open up. They're going to trust when they feel like they are being heard and they feel like they are also a master at their craft. And so it allows the teacher to actually give feedback to the coach. And so that's something I would call reverberation, and I unpack that. We also look at diversity, and not only diversity in ethnicities and also thinking, but in how we see the world and how we work and how that's very, very powerful. And so we look at diversity and how we can really increase that inside of our schools, inside of the coaching role. And looking at things like, of course, collaboration. And some of the, I tackle some of the misconceptions of collaboration. I think that we are in a world now where collaboration has become such a big buzzword that I think that sometimes we can over collaborate. And so I provide maybe a different perspective, maybe a more of a balanced perspective on collaboration and how we can really provide a place for all kinds of personality types. So, the extrovert who loves to be around people and can really feed off ideas, but also the introvert that needs a lot of structured quiet time to be able to problem solve. So I think, those are just some high-level concepts and kind of teasers there for the audience as they think about, how would this book really help to improve my coaching and my teaching?
Yeah, and you really caught my interest with these misconceptions of collaboration. And I'm wondering, you talked about too, that there's times that you can actually collaborate too much. So are there any signs that a school leader can be looking for in terms of this is what healthy collaboration looks like, or here's some warning signs that maybe we're doing it too much or doing it ineffectively or in an unhealthy way and we need to pull back?
Absolutely. I think that what a leader must do is be a part of the daily activities happening in the school. And so many times coaches are expected to facilitate these coaching meetings and these meetings with teachers where they're coming together and they're planning together. And so as a leader, as a coach or principal takes part in these meetings, they can see the energy level. They can see the kinds of the goals and the outcomes that they are coming up with collaboratively. And so they're really listening and they're watching the way that teachers work. And eventually we know that coming together and being creative is definitely something that is a skill that we have to foster, not only with our students, but with teachers and as adults. But also it gets to a point where if teacher teams are meeting in a way where they feel like they are having to comply with the demands of the school. And so you hear phrases like, oh, we have to go to this team meeting, or I don't have time to do X, Y, and Z because I have to go and plan it. And you listen to the way that they are framing, I have to go do this. And so we want a meeting or a collaborative time to be something that is energizing, that teachers decide that they want to do on their own, and it's something that they initiate. And so I provide some concepts in the book that talk about really providing some, and I give kind of a sample agenda that could be followed during a meeting where it allows the extroverts and the introverts to really share in meaningful ways. And so it gives everyone an opportunity to share, but also provides opportunities for quiet time. And even extroverts, whether they think they need it or not, they need some time, right, some quiet time to process. And everyone needs the equal opportunity to be able to listen to information that's being shared, think about it, how it applies to them, and then be able to communicate their reflection out loud. And just as we expect students to have independent time to practice or to think high-level concepts, we have to provide that for teachers as well. So I think listening, I think looking for some culture aspects within the meetings are signs that maybe not enough collaboration is happening or too much collaboration is happening, and then being able to provide some structure to meetings. I've heard from Jeff Bezos from Amazon talking about if there is not a meeting agenda, they treat these meetings as optional. So if it's not important enough to create a meeting agenda or a structure, then it might not be the best use of time. And so I think that's a great concept to follow.
Nathan, you are rocking this podcast already. I'm so fired up just hearing these things. And I have an Amazon connection I'm going to share in a second. But, you know, I so appreciate your approach. And it sounds like, you know, a lot of what I've read in Quiet, I think, is that Susan Cain?
And it is. And I reference her in the book as well. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up.
And just building that time in, like, that was such a huge aha moment for me. You know, we have these meetings and we ask people to contribute and do this round table and whatever, but rarely, like before this book, there was never a time where I saw a leader or myself as a leader say, hey, let's take 5-10 minutes and just pause and like gather our thoughts. If you need to leave the room to do that and, you know, come back or whatever, but just to give people time to actually process. And like you said, extroverts can benefit from that as well. And now here's my Amazon connection, which is I recently read on Inc. that Jeff Bezos outlawed slideshows, right? Like PowerPoint presentations.
Yeah.
And he forces everybody to have like a 4-6 page document, and folks have to read and annotate and actually digest and think, because at this point, most people don't even know how to use PowerPoints. They suck. People tune out. And, you know, it's sad to say, but 9 times out of 10, when you see a presentation, they're just reading their slides to you.
Yep.
And you could just read those on your own. Like there's no point for them presenting. And I don't understand why people don't get it. But so that was my little Amazon connection, you know, veered off a bit from everyday instructional coaching, but maybe there's a little value for the listeners there too. So let's get back to you, because, you know,
Absolutely. You're
why we're here. And I'm wondering, Nathan, do you have some success stories of instructional coaching that, you know, you love to share that could really show us and bring us to the moment of people just being incredibly effective within that role that the listeners could benefit from?
Absolutely. There are so many, actually. And the one that will typically come to my mind when asked about, you know, what are who are some phenomenal instructional coaches and what makes them so phenomenal? And I think that coaches have a unique role of being a catalyst for change. And one of the drivers in the book is called influence. And I didn't call it catalyst. I didn't call it, you know, catalyst for change, because I didn't want to play along the verbiage we hear a lot about, you know, being a change agent. But typically what happens is that anytime there's a change initiative, you have some tension that builds between what we know and which is very safe, and then something brand new. And so there's a tension there. And coaches have this really unique ability, because really inherently, because of their role and the trust that they've developed with teachers, to help them really consider their own practice and really consider why not choose this new course of action. And we know in life this is not that easy. We know that anytime there's change, we can't just say, okay, conquer your fear and embrace this new concept. It just doesn't happen that way. And so I provide a couple of strategies, one based on what I saw witnessed by a coach. And what it was that we were looking at going a particular direction, and I believe it was looking at homework. And the, you know, obviously with the new research coming out with elementary schools and homework, we found that it's just not effective to give elementary students homework. And I could probably argue the case for middle and high school as well. But so the change was obviously diminishing the amount of homework, or actually completely taking it out. And what I saw in the way this coach worked with the teacher is that the coach found a teacher that was already not assigning homework, but it was for really different reasons. It was really based on the style of the teacher. And so the teacher had more of kind of an impromptu, more of a meaningful kind of approach to assigning work. And so they just really didn't see the value in it, but it really didn't have anything to do with the research that we had found. It was just natural. And this was a teacher that was probably well-respected, but also was known to be very vocal in their opinions. And so we knew if this teacher embraced the change, then any teacher would, because this is always the first teacher teacher to say, hold up here, why are we doing this? And we kind of push back. And so although the teacher had a different reason for not assigning homework, it's still, we were able to really use that and say, hey, look, this teacher, we'll say Miss Jones is not assigning homework and look at the success she's having. And so we told her the direction kind of where we were going as a school, and she was able to help us kind of move the needle. And so even though she didn't initially have our vision for it, she developed the vision using some of the activities she was already doing. So in the book, I call that, you know, catching on convention, taking a, you know, existing practice and being able to maybe have a new twist on it, or I will call it, you know, reposition it. So taking something you're already doing it, but saying, this is a new vision. You're still doing the exact same thing, but we have a new why. And so we have to make sure, you know, we always go back to starting with the why, which is, you know, Simon Sinek has great principles with why. We start with the why. And so that's one of the stories that really emerge when I think about success of an instructional coach helping to change, say, either culture in the building or certain practices in the building. Mm.
You brought up a very powerful concept, right? This idea of the why, what motivates you, what drives you, and what you do. And Nathan, I'm curious, what is your why when it comes to this work?
Ah, a great question. I think, you know, my why is, and it's the reason why I'm what I'm doing today. And, you know, I was a teacher and I was a principal and worked in district office with curriculum instruction. And now I'm, you know, with WeVideo, I'm the chief education officer with WeVideo. And really, our vision is for students to be self-directed and to really create their own learning and really to spark creativity in students. And so I think ultimately that is my why is, and I tweeted this morning about learning. And many times when we think of deep learning, we always go back to these strategies and research-based practices and so forth. But if we're not teaching students to create and to communicate effectively, then they can acquire all this knowledge. But whenever maybe a friend or a family member asks them to explain a concept, they're not able to explain it in a way that makes sense to the other person. And so in the end, what does that knowledge do? Does it help anybody? It doesn't help anybody because we didn't really cultivate those really important skills. And so although I believe that content is very important, you know, like Isaac Newton, he really, I think without creativity, he would not have been able to give us the laws of physics. Did he have to have a foundation for mathematics and science? Absolutely. But, you know, he was, if it wasn't for creativity, he would have never been able to tie an apple falling from a tree, or if that's really what happened, to the moon orbiting the earth. He was able to be creative with those concepts and make a connection. And so going back to the original question, I think that's really my ultimate why and goal is to help education see that we have to really foster creativity and all of these success, I call them success skills now because I'm beyond the 21st century skills jargon. You know, these are skills that are truly going to make us successful and truly help students show empathy towards one another and character and citizenship. And so that really helps to drive my work. And if I think back really, even as a teacher that's in the classroom, that was, even though as a chemistry teacher, still in the end, it was how are students going to be able to work together to create something brand new and innovative and thoughtful.
Love the why, you know, helping schools and districts see the power of creativity and fostering these success skills. That's a great why if I summed it up correctly.
Absolutely. Definitely. Thank you for for doing that. Sometimes I can definitely keep going on and on. So I have to actually work on my synthesis skills and being able to be very concise and being very simple with my own reflections.
Listen, that's what I do as a podcast host. You know, it's funny when I turn the video on for like Facebook Live or something like that, if I don't have it scripted out, you know, it goes pretty crazy. So it's, you know, you put in the reps, but your why is powerful. And I'm really thankful that you shared it. So we have a common connection, Matt Foster, and we're in a similar principals group on Facebook. And he was just, you know, sharing your book and saying how awesome it was. And I said, Matt, Nathan's going to be on the podcast soon. We've got it scheduled. So I asked him, what question would you want me to ask Nathan? And this is what he said. Matt writes, the book is so well-rounded, but what about principals who don't have a coaching model with staffing? I wonder what advice Nathan could offer for principals who play both the evaluator and the coach.
Oh, that's a fantastic question. And definitely want to say, I give a shout out to Matt. I appreciate all of his reflections. He has been fantastic of really tweeting out his thoughts. And so it's been really great to hear how people are digesting the book and how they're incorporating it into their practice. So thanks, Matt, for that. And great question as well. You know, I have always been a big believer that an instructional coach cannot also be an evaluator. So what has to happen is that if that is the case, I think a principal can still really sharpen their leadership skills by incorporating these daily drivers. And we know that the best leaders are those leaders where teachers feel like they could just walk side by side with them, and there is no proverbial desk or proverbial office door standing between a teacher and a principal. That the principal is truly there to support the teacher's success and ultimately the student's success. And so a principal, if they don't have a coach, has to work really, really hard at trusting relationships, at giving feedback. I think one practical way of a principal doing this is to have a daily presence in the classroom and be able to give positive affirmations every single time they're in the classroom. And for it to not be tied to any kind of evaluation measure, any kind of a score, not tied to any kind of number, where it's truly centered on this, what are you doing as a teacher that's contributing to a student-centered learning environment? And so I think that's what has to happen is a coach or a principal has to work really, really hard at embodying these drivers of collaboration and discourse and reverberation and being able to develop this trusting relationship. I would also say in the spirit of, I guess, creativity and problem solving, I would, if a school has the ability to do so, to actually look at the funding in the school and the teachers and ask yourself, is there a teacher that we can actually dub an instructional coach, or maybe several teachers, maybe take a team approach, maybe choose three or four teachers and have, you know, dedicate 2 or 3 hours a day with where they are really dedicated to going in and working with alongside of teachers, giving feedback, being problem solvers alongside of them. So I think that even if the technical role doesn't exist, a principal can be really creative with their teaching staff. And also they can just be very hypersensitive of how they are being a coach just through their conversations.
Awesome advice. And as a former instructional coach, you know, what I want to say to the listeners, you need to avoid adding more to that coach's plate, because when you see them chatting, right, when you see them developing relationships with their peers and the staff, that is the foundation of, to me, a successful program, because you need to build that trust. And I think a common error that a lot of principals see is, oh, you know, they're talking to their peers or whatever. They don't see the value of the relationship building. So then you could speak into, you know, those teachers' lives, and they add this quasi, you know, administrative work that they need to do and fill up their time. You're going to screw up your whole instructional coaching program if you do that. And so just respect the process and it's a long game, and go all in on relationships. And if you can allow your people to do that, to build relationships and speak into their instruction, I think great things will follow. Of course, you need to get everyday instructional coaching and follow the roadmap in there. But I just wanted to give that little tip too, as a former instructional coach.
Excellent tip, Daniel. I appreciate that.
Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. Cool. So, you know, I have a couple of just nerdy, curious questions we'll end with. But before we get there, I'm really interested in your work at WeVideo. And you were talking about the power of video in the pre-chat before we started recording. Yeah. And so schools, you know, they need to get modern and they need to be more innovative. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do a lot of stuff because I feel like I have a message, right? For me, my why is I help school leaders fight isolation and frustration via a leadership community to find clarity and solutions to their biggest challenges, right?
Yeah.
So that's my why. That's what I do. But so people don't know about that unless I talk about it. The podcast is one way, and I need to think about how do I get it out there. That's my long way of saying video is awesome, right?
Yeah.
That's what people are engaging with. And so that's my segue to you in talking about the power of video within schools.
Absolutely. A fantastic segue. And you know, you're right. Video is very powerful. And we have to think about how are we, if we know that video is motivating for students, why are we not doing enough to incorporate into the classroom? And it's, when you hear that, sometimes you might think, oh, you know, let's look up YouTube videos or, you know, something. So we're not talking about necessarily consumption. We're talking about creation. And if you think about it, we as teachers are always thinking about how can we ask students to make their thinking more visible? And how can we provide for them a platform for them to do so? And so one of the ways we can do that is having a student, I mean, I can't think of any more motivating way than having them create a video of telling their story, because everyone has a story to tell. Everyone has a perspective and an experience to share. And so being able as a teacher to structure an activity or experience, I like experience much better than the activity, where they are allowing a student to really showcase their thinking and maybe explain how they arrived at a solution, maybe explain from their perspective how they were able to arrive at some opinion. And so if we're looking for ways on how we can even formatively assess a student, I'm encouraging teachers, hey, instead of a paper pencil quiz or a writing prompt, what if we ask students to create a video? And this could be a short, quick 15 to 30 second video, or it could be a documentary movie that they create. And so the scale is up to the teacher and the student, of course, but it's a powerful way of teacher not only being able to get insight into the thinking and learning of a student, but a powerful engagement tool for students to be able to create a story, to be able to synthesize different experiences and be able to really sequence a beautiful story told from their perspective and also perspectives of others as they are going through the video creation process. So yeah, I'm very, very, very passionate about kind of tweaking practices where, you know, we have like a turn and talk, for example. You know, why not have a quick video shoot or, you know, a video creation moment where students are able to share more about their thinking and learning.
All right. And what message would you put on school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just one day?
That's a great question. You know, I think this is where like my ability to not synthesize and be concise is going to, I'd need like multiple marquees. Yeah. But, you know, I would think something along the lines of, you know, harnessing your inner creativity, because I truly do think every student has a story to tell. I think every student is capable of creating a beautiful solution to a problem that others can't even see. I always give credit to my husband. He is an amazing problem solver and he sees things I can't see. And so when he communicates these things, I'm like, oh, I've never seen them this way before. So I think there are puzzle pieces that can be put together in brand new ways. And I think we just have to harness that for every student and be able to encourage and foster it.
All right. And this is the last question. Normally I ask about building your school, but you and Jeff, you know, talked about that way back on episode 63. So we're going to end with this. Tony Robbins is famous for saying quality questions create a quality life. Successful people ask better questions, and as a result, they get better answers. So what's one question you would recommend that principals ask more frequently?
You know, I think that principal, and I even put this in the book, that how can I better support you? And that's truly, no, I think it's better than how can I help you? You know, but puts it, and of course, there has to be a culture for this in the school, but although it puts the leader in a very vulnerable place, the leader has to come to a place where they are not only asking how I can better support you, but maybe doing it in a way that's, you know, anonymous, where they, where teachers feel complete freedom to share whatever they need to, and they need to, and principals actually showing the data. So, you know, giving an anonymous survey and putting the data out for everyone to see. These are all the things that the teachers are saying about me, how I can better support them. And I think that's really going to, even though it hurts, there may be some taking it personal in the very beginning. If we're truly concerned about making the school better and making ourselves better as leaders and as coaches, then it's a question that we have to ask.
Well, Nathan, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Any parting words of advice and the best way to get a hold of you?
Absolutely. So feel free to send me a tweet. Again, it's at drlangrad, R-A-A-D, on Twitter. Definitely love to connect with educators across the globe. And, you know, my advice would be to, and this may seem, you know, a bit cliche, but I would tell educators, continue learning, but not only through reading. You know, Twitter is a great place to find articles and so forth, but visit places you've never visited before, or find someone who's different, find a leader who has a very different style, and just have a conversation, visit their school. And so continue learning, but maybe in ways that are out of your comfort zone. It's very easy to read a book. And of course, I'm asking people, hey, you know, read my book. But at the same time, we can't just be reading books, we have to truly be able to sit side by side with someone who's different and be able to ask them questions and be able to look through the lens that, through which they are looking through.
Better leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Nathan. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Nathan in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources like his amazing book, Everyday Instructional Coaching, and The Best Way to Connect. Nathan, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you so much, Daniel. It's such an honor and privilege to be here with you today.
All right, better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. I created a new resource for you called The 3 Leadership Questions I Ask Every Day. You can download the resource by visiting betterleadersbetterschools.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. This helps me in a few ways. It gives the show some social proof. It encourages new people to listen to the show, and it improves the ranking of the show and therefore helps me serve more school leaders. If you want extra credit and some good vibes, share your biggest takeaway from the show and tag me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer, and make sure to use the hashtag BLBX. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Join over 3,000 school leaders that get this resource delivered every week. In the weekend resource, I share content curated specifically for school leaders. You'll get articles, videos, templates and exercises, coaching tips, inspirational quotes, invitations to free Friday group coaching, which is an exclusive offer made available only to newsletter subscribers in the Better Leaders, Better Schools tribe, and links to all the content I created for you this past week. You could subscribe at betterleadersbetterschools.com/weekend-resource. And remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader.